Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear. Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Today is October 14th. I can't believe it, but it's October 14th, 2015, and it's a Wednesday, which means it's an interview Wednesday, and we are extremely fortunate again to have another interview with Sean from the SGT Report. I don't know how many of you actually visit that website every day, but it's gotten to the point with myself where I'm almost afraid not to visit the website, which is www.sgtreport.com. It's an outstanding news. I consider it a news agency now. It brings you stories that we don't find and don't hear about. This week I have Sean on the line. Hi, Sean, are you there?
I am, Lonnie. Thank you so much for that kind introduction. It's absolutely my pleasure to be on with you because you're doing such fantastic work in awakening to the world to the dangers, the insidious nature of radiation and nuclear power. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. And thank you for those kind words. But it is really, you know, this is why I reached out to you in the first place to interview you, is that I really believe that the idea behind the social programming, the things that really are twisting our world upside down, are all interconnected. The misinformation is all interconnected by the people who kind of believe that we're just all useless feeders. You know, we're considered to be useless feeders by the elite, and they certainly do treat us that way with the levels of radiation and toxic just bombardment that on every level, not only radiation, but it is, you know, as Jules reports every day on this radio station, you know, the GMO, we're being attacked on all sides, and it is time for the people to stand up, get educated, pay attention, and pressure the people in power to have some humanity and stand up to the people that are in power. So yep. I want to talk to you today about, you know, as I said, it's kind of interesting because every time I go to your webpage, there's like more things that are just knocking me off my feet. This week you had a YouTube video called The criminals running the Fed are stealing trillions. And that was with John Titus. You interviewed John Titus. I actually listened to that about three or four times. It was, there's so much about that I don't understand in terms of the big money stuff. But John Titus basically really outlined how it was working. And he has a YouTube a channel called Best Evidence, which you suggested everybody subscribe to. He doesn't have many videos, but man, are they very powerful.
Yeah, John Titus is a great guy, and thanks for mentioning that video. You know, John Titus is a attorney by day, a patent attorney, and a very, very bright guy, and he's taught himself to be a producer, essentially, and he's taught himself how to edit, and he's taught himself graphics. If you watch that video he did They came from Planet Klepto, which he and I discuss in our interview about the Fed stealing trillions. All of the graphic art, all of the animated animations you see in that video, he did himself, which to me is really astounding because he's taught himself some programs that I don't know how to do, and I've been a producer director for 20 years. So he's a very, very bright guy. And so what he did in that video is he outlined the Fed's criminality, Lonnie, by using Fed minutes. Now, apparently, the minutes that he got, they release, I think he told me 5 years afterwards. So he was able to get these in like 2014, and they were the 2009 minutes. And they show the Fed's criminality. They show the Fed's intent to defraud the people. And Titus says that the Fed is now a sword to steal money, and it's a shield to hide their crimes. So a very, very complex thing, but more and more people are starting to awaken to the fact that the crux of the problems that we're facing in this nation and that people around the world are facing are these criminal central banks, right? The Federal Reserve is a privately owned criminal central bank, and it's fleecing the people. And that's the crux of our problem. That's why we're never going to extricate ourselves from this debt problem. That's why the debt ceiling will only continue to go up. And that's why China and Russia are getting out of treasuries, because the Fed is debasing the dollar. And they said that they have to at this point, Lonnie. They have said that they need to debase the dollar. It's the only fix. And the Fed is the buyer of last resort for our treasuries. A complex issue. But John Titus does a very great job of quantifiably breaking it all down.
That's really astounding. The graphs, I would really suggest that everybody listening to this radio show watch that, listen to your interview with John Titus. Was so intriguing, honestly. I listened to it at least three times. There was so much. It was jam-packed with information. And his little video that he did, I really do need to watch it again. I have to say, I only watched it once. But the graphs that you say that he created were really astounding, because he used their information. He used public information. It wasn't anything he made up. And the thing that I really wanted to talk to you about was the fact that it's just right there in the transcripts. He was quoting from the transcripts where they're basically saying they had told everybody they had this planned transition to bring us back into balance. And they're basically in their meetings going, we don't have any plans, folks. I mean, That's essentially what they were saying, is like, we don't really have any plans, so what do? They were planning how to cover up in public meetings that they disclosed publicly. It was like my eyes popped out of my head. I couldn't believe the audacity. Like, when I heard that the first time, I thought about Barack Obama, because he's like the audacity to change. I'm like, really? Now that's what we really call audacity, is what the frickin' Fed is doing.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely right. I've prepared a bite here that I can play for you from that interview, and this is John Titus. I think what I would say before I play this bite is just to keep in mind that the reason the Fed was essentially laughing about having to convince the American people that they had an exit strategy is because they need to keep this illusion going. And if you imagine, Lonnie, a group of people that own a public-facing institution, right, like the Federal Reserve, that the public doesn't realize isn't part of the government. And and the people that own it are banks, right, criminal international banks started by criminal international banking families. So they own this public-facing institution, but the public doesn't realize that it's privately owned. That's why they need to create the illusion, because they have so much power. They have more power than any sitting president. In fact, Alan Greenspan once said, there is no institution in the United States government that can challenge or overturn the decisions that we make, right? It's autonomous. But the public doesn't really understand that. The public has been sold since 1913, since day one, since the Federal Reserve was brought into fruition, the day it was born. They've been told that it's the Federal Reserve. It's no more federal than Federal Express, as has been said so many times by others. And imagine a institution like that has the power to print money out of thin air and give it to their buddies. That's what they've been doing, and people are finally catching on. So let me play the soundbite from John Titus. Here it is.
Okay, thank you.
Here's how it works. The Fed prints up $1.7 trillion. It pays the banks $1.7 trillion in exchange for their mortgage-backed securities. Okay, so now you have $1.7 trillion in the hands of the banks. The banks then turn around and take that $1.7 trillion and they park it. They lend it back to the Federal Reserve, which in turn pays interest of 0.25% to the banks. And so that's the figure you see on the liability side. You see a liability of $1.7 trillion on the Fed's balance sheet, representing the $1.7 trillion that the banks, which got the $1.7 trillion from the Fed, lent back to the Fed. And now the Fed owes the bank back $1.7 trillion. On the asset side of the balance sheet, you see $1.7 trillion in mortgage-backed securities. But you can see the problem there because the mortgage-backed securities, as we just saw, are worthless. They're garbage.
Okay. So could you hear that okay?
Yes, we could actually hear that great. That's astounding.
Okay, great. Here's why that needed to be played, and I know that's probably one of the more complicated sound bites I could have chosen for you. What's important for people to understand is before the collapse, right before the collapse back in 2008, before the collapse became so public, and Hank Paulson went in front of Congress and said, we need $700 billion. The banks need a bailout or the whole economy is coming down, which essentially was him saying, give us $700 billion or we're going to take the whole economy down. Before that happened, Merrill Lynch, I believe it was Merrill Lynch, if memory serves, was selling their mortgage-backed securities for 5.4 cents on the dollar. They were really worthless in the free market. And all of these banks had these worthless mortgage-backed securities, which we can get into the mortgage fraud. We probably don't have time for that today, but it makes you wonder who really owns the title to your home every month you pay your mortgage.
Let's talk about that.
That's a very complicated issue. We could eat up the whole hour on that, but let me finish
Let's
this
do
thought.
That on another show and devote a whole show to that. That's what I mean, because we really, that is something that really needs to be exposed.
Yeah, and it's criminal, and the banks knew that what they were up to was criminal, and they're wrapping all of these mortgages into mortgage-backed securities and selling them out the back door to pensions, doing terrible criminal things. The point is this. So Merrill Lynch was selling their mortgage-backed securities for 5.4 cents on the dollar right before the collapse. The other international banks, the other criminal banks, the domestic banks as well that had these mortgage-backed securities had the luxury, because they were better connected apparently than Merrill Lynch, to sell these worthless mortgage-backed securities to the Federal Reserve at full price. So, Lonnie, it would be like you owning a stock that you paid $100 for that is now trading at $5.40 that nobody will even give you $5 for it anymore. It's going to zero, and everyone knows it's going to zero. And your dad says, "Well, I'll tell you what, Lonnie, I'm a well-heeled guy, and I'm gonna just buy that for. I'm gonna pay you what you paid. Here's $100 for it." So.
When the collapse happened, I didn't really understand the money market at all. But you know what? That I understood quite well. And it seemed so, so outrageous. I did actually call my elected officials, and I was told that it was necessary, that if we didn't do it that way, that the economy was going to collapse. And I said, so let it collapse.
Yeah. Well, and that's what they were told. And they were told that by Hank Paulson and his criminal buddies. And it was extortion, okay? Let's call it what it is. It's extortion. So they extorted the American people of $700 billion. And now, so the Fed has $1.7 trillion in worthless mortgage-backed securities on the books, right? In exchange for that, they've printed into existence $1.7 trillion. They've given that money to the criminal banks. And here's, you want to talk about adding injury to insult. Now the Fed pays these criminal banks that they gave the money to, they exchanged the fiat money for the worthless MBSs, and now they pay those criminal banks 0.25% interest to just hold that money. So the money that was printed into existence isn't even being lent out to new business owners. It's not being lent out to spur economic growth. It's just being held by the international banks, and they're actually making interest money off it from the Fed. That's how criminal it is. The Fed also has $2.5 trillion.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Because in that, in the documentary, he was showing us the difference of how throughout history, as the deposits go up, so do the loans to keep the economy stimulated.
That's right.
But after we borrowed money, he shows this huge gap. It's like the size of Italy, basically, the GDP of Italy, I think he said. It was quite graphic. It was really an excellent graph, but he showed how they're hoarding the money and making interest off of it, like billions of dollars, like lots and lots of money on interest, just by not lending out the money and starving. They're basically drowning the baby in the bathwater.
Yeah, that's right. They're doing the same thing they did in the 1930s, which extended the Great Depression. They're not loaning the money out to those who need it, new business owners, etc. And the Fed also has $2.5 trillion in treasuries on the books. And John Titus and I talked about that. We both think that that figure is probably and should be to justify all the money printing that's gone on and all the bond market malfeasance that is going on, because Russia and China are no longer buying bonds. They're actively selling their bonds or treasury holdings. We think that number probably should be far higher than $2.5 trillion. But $2.5 trillion is a lot of money, and it's on the Fed books, and it's because they're the buyer of last resort of U.S. Treasury. So this whole Ponzi scheme is coming down, and I actually have another bite at some point in this call I want to play for you. It speaks to the fact that the criminality is only going to get worse, because they're not going to stop digging this hole. Because if they stop digging this hole, the whole Ponzi scheme comes down. Because, as I said, the dollar is now only backed by confidence, and the whole world is losing confidence in the dollar, and so nobody's buying the bonds. And if nobody's buying the bonds, but the government needs to keep printing the bonds to fund the government and, you know, the $2.5 trillion a year budget or whatever it is, the buyer of last resort is the Fed. So what is the Fed going to do? What are the international criminal banks going to do? Well, they're going to start charging interest. They're going to charge you interest, Lonnie, to hold your money in a savings account at the bank. That's probably what they're going to do, and now they're openly talking about it. It's called negative interest rates. So I could play a clip for you, but maybe we should...
Yeah, that means that if you leave your money in the bank for... I think that kind of has two things. If you leave the money in the bank for too long, your balance goes down, and they also limit the fact that you can't take your money out of the bank. There's only so much you can take out at a time.
Yeah, that's right. Do you guys realize, and I say you guys, anyone listening, do you realize that out of all the trillions and trillions and trillions in fiat Federal Reserve notes that have been printed into existence, imagine the number, right? We know we're $18.2 trillion in debt, plus trillions and trillions more in unfunded liabilities. Out of all of the fiat money ever printed into existence, only 2% of that money exists in physical form, meaning dollars that you could get from the bank. Only 2%. And now think of real money, right? Our money used to be real money. If you go back to the 60s, there was silver coins in circulation. And if you go back to the late 1800s, we had gold coins. All of that is now gone too. So if only 2% of the outstanding fiat money is in physical form, imagine how precious and rare physical, real, true money is, the money of kings, silver and gold, right? I bring it up a lot because people need to think about it, and that's why the Fed doesn't want people taking their deposits out, because there is precious little fiat even backing this system now. It's such a fractional reserve system that most of the money that's been printed into existence is just ones and zeros on computers. It's very, very complex. But when this system comes down, it's going to hurt everybody.
Okay, so let me ask you about this, because I'm really new to this idea about the money market, which is why I really value our conversations and your interviews here, because I think I reflect many people who sort of kind of get the general idea, but we don't have money invested in the market. We don't have things to fail in, you know what I mean? When you have a lot invested, if I had maybe 500,000 invested, I might understand it, but I don't. So this is my question to you, like how this works now. The COMEX index that you talk about, where there's only a very small amount of gold, is that gold reflective of the real money, the dollars that you're talking about? Because if there's only 2% of real currency, does that 2% of currency actually really reflect the amount of gold? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, you're on the right track. The way you need to look at gold, gold is what is supposed to back the currency, right? We are told that there's somewhere in the neighborhood of, I think it's 8,500 tons of gold in Fort Knox, in below the New York Fed. Most of the gold backing the dollar is said to be in Fort Knox, right? But there hasn't been an audit of the Fort Knox gold, Lonnie, since 1954. So nobody really knows, especially now that we know the banks have been not accused of, but convicted of manipulating the currencies, manipulating the interest rates. They've been fined for all sorts of crimes.
Why has there not been an audit? I mean, why has nobody gone in there and just said, okay, we're going to count how much gold you have?
Because this is a banana republic, essentially, at this point, and it's controlled by the Federal Reserve. The money, the gold in Fort Knox is under the domain and the control of the U.S. Treasury and essentially the Federal Reserve by proxy. And the U.S. Treasury cannot afford to let the world know that the gold's not there. There are a lot of reports, none of them verified, but a lot of reports and speculation that the gold went out the back door back during that Nixon era. Do you remember in 1970 when Nixon took us off the gold standard?
Yes.
It's because all of the other nation states were taking delivery of their gold because they didn't like the amount of money that was being printed then. Imagine how much money's been printed since then, right? So they can't afford to let the world know that the gold's not there. We suspect, GATA suspects, GATA's an organization, the Gold Antitrust Association, has been doing this work diligently since around 2000 and even before, but they became a public organization around 2000, took out a full-page ad, I believe, in the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, expressing their concern about what we're talking about now, the Federal Reserve, the money printing, where is our gold? And we don't know where the gold is because we can't get an audit. And the reason we're never going to get an audit of that gold is because if the world found out the gold had been hypothecated or leased or taken out the back door and given to other nation states or incredibly wealthy international banking families, the dollar would then immediately collapse. But as long as there's the illusion that the dollar is backed by gold, then they can sort of continue to keep this system propped up. The problem is that if you imagine say there's 8,000 tons of gold at Fort Knox. Let's say it really exists. In 1970, based on all outstanding dollars in circulation, you could figure out what gold was really worth. Well, now there's so many more trillions of dollars out there in circulation that even if we have 8,000 tons of gold, which nobody believes that we do, the dollar's been way devalued by virtue of so many more dollars being printed. So the whole system is an illusion, and you're right, though. Gold is important. Central banks deem gold important. Central banks trade between themselves in gold, and nation states are hoarding gold. China's hoarding as much gold as it can get its hands on, Lonnie.
You know, this actually really speaks to me about why we are a warring nation right now, because if we did not have these ongoing, constant, all these wars, and we're in this constant state of anxiety about being attacked, people would be demanding and paying attention to what the banks are doing. But it's a really great diversionary tactic to keep us in the state of fear. I mean, it actually does, it's kind of a win-win situation for them, if you ask me, because they have control of our money. They have control of our food supply. I just read a report that says GMOs are out of control. They have control now of our water, and they have control of our government. And so, you know, it's an astounding, as we're talking here, Sean, actually, I'm looking out my window, and there are chemtrails literally circling, making circles around Eugene. So they have control of our air even. It's a really amazing fact that our elected officials, you know, I know that Ron Paul really has been calling for years to audit the Fed, and that people run away from him. And I think that's probably what ruined his political career, was that he was really adamant. He wasn't, when he ran for president, he was not backing down on that one. That was one you know.
You're right. Well, Ron Paul is one of the only men on this planet that I really look up to. And boy, was I a Ron Paul supporter, because he was speaking so much truth. You know, but it's a little bit like imagine a really large extended family, and everybody's over at the house for Thanksgiving, and everybody's bought and paid for by the super rich, super corrupt dad, except for the one son who says, "Dad's a serial murderer. You got to check that closet. Look in the closet." Everybody's got to look in the closet. If we just look in that closet, you'll understand that what I'm telling you is true. Well, nobody wants to look in the closet because dad, you know, they all have a wonderful lifestyle, and we're not going to look in the closet. And you're crazy to look in that closet because dad's fine, even though there's bodies and all sorts of, creepy stuff in the closet. That's what Ron Paul was saying about audit the Fed. And he finally did get a limited audit. Sorry if that was a terrible analogy, but a terrible metaphor. But he did finally get a limited audit of the Fed, and it revealed, you know what it revealed? $16 trillion. In loans went out to domestic and international banks, $16 trillion. So I don't, you know, what Titus
did,
and I were talking
about. When did that happen?
I think the limited audit of the Fed was in 2011, I think, 2012, 2013. I'd have to go back and check, but Titus and I didn't even talk about that. You know, we didn't even talk about how that money's accounted for. But you know, it's...
Well, the other thing that you guys talked about that really, really fascinated me is that they're actually, you know, because I'm a student, I actually have a student loan, right, a small student loan at this point. But I was really, like, stunned that he said that our student loans are wrapped up and sold as, basically, they wrap up good student loans with bad student loans and sell them as a certificate. It's like, there is nothing that is sacred to these people. They are willing to just undermine every single human being's life for their own personal greed. It, to me, the level of depravity is just shocking.
Like, well, listen to this. Okay, so you're right. And imagine that you are one of these pension holders in Illinois or California, and you've been probably, you're a firefighter for 21 years and you're retired, and now you're promised a pension that's equal to or better than your best year's salary, and they're going to supposedly pay that to you to the day you die. The pension situation in California and Illinois, they're the most underfunded states by far, and they're bankrupt, and they're never going to. So what they do is they overreach for return, right? They need to make 8, 9, 10, 11% a year, which is impossible. You can't make 11% a year every single year, but that's what they need to do to ever have any hope of paying these underfunded pensions. So they overextend, and they buy this crap from Wall Street under the promise that, oh, here's a package, here's this a product that we're going to sell you with all these student loans in it, and the return is going to be, you know, 9% a year forever. Well, guess what? You know, there's more than $1 trillion now in outstanding student loans, and I think somewhere in the neighborhood of 30% of them, Lonnie, are now in default.
Yeah.
So, again, Wall Street criminality is going to bankrupt. You know, George Carlin said it best when he said, they're coming for your retirement money, and they're going to get it. They're going to get it all because you ain't in the big club. And he's right. That's what they're doing through these criminal products, and they don't care. Wall Street doesn't care. They just care. The guys on Wall Street care about their next Ferrari or their next yacht or their next, you know, trip to, you know, the Riviera. They don't care about you and me. And their bosses above them certainly don't care about you and me, the people at the central banks. So all of this behavior has been mandated because there is no rule of law. When's the last time you saw a Wall Street banker go to jail? Was it probably Bernie Madoff? Anybody from Goldman Sachs or J.P. Morgan or the Federal Reserve go to jail?
Yeah, who was it? There was Gore Vidal, I think I heard him talking, or was it Gore Vidal? Maybe, I don't know if he's, there was somebody talking, I forget his name, he was in an interview, and he was saying basically, we don't have the Magna Carta, our Constitution is dead, not only has it been dead, but it's been trampled on, and we don't even have basic 800 years Magna Carta rules, the rule of law. You guys discussed that yesterday, what the rule of law means. The rule of law means that there's only one rule. Either you follow the rules or you go to jail. And evidently, the feds are above the law. So that means that there is no real rule of law in this country, which is why we have the feds basically standing in front of Congress and lying through their teeth. I mean, that's the shocking part. If I watch C-SPAN quite a bit, and I watch the hearings as often as I can, many different types of hearings. It is astounding. The people that lie to Congress are the Federal Reserve, are the NSA and the CIA. There are supposedly most trusted law enforcement officials and our most trusted banking officials who, in theory, are supposed to have the highest level of integrity because they make the process work. And these people regularly will sit in front of our Congress and lie bold-faced. And the shocking part that I learned is when they lie, most of our congressmen already know what they're going to say. The senators, when Clapper lied to my senator, Ron Wyden, when he asked him if they'd ever been spying on everybody, Ron Wyden knew about that. Same thing with the feds, at the hearings at the feds. They knew the truth. They knew exactly, that's why they all sat there looking so smug, because they knew they could just sit there and lie to Congress and put on a little pretend show for C-SPAN and for the world, and it'll all just go away and, you know, too effing bad, like it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Okay, let me read two quotes for you, will you?
Sure.
Well, actually, the first is a definition. Tell me if this doesn't sound a little bit like the country in which we live now, okay? A banana republic is a term for a politically unstable country whose economy is largely dependent on exporting a limited resource product, Now, Lonnie, think about the things we export. Mostly we export dollars and war, right? It typically has stratified social classes, including a large, impoverished working class. Now, think what's happening to the middle class and how we have 45 million people on food stamps. And it has a ruling plutocracy of business, political, and military elites. This politico-economic oligarchy controls the primary sector productions to exploit the country's economy. I mean, aside from us having, you know, the most powerful warring machine on the planet, take that away and all we are is a banana republic. But, you know, this speaks to a limited resource product that, the country exports. What do we export? Dollars and war. Dollar debt and war. This debt-death paradigm needs to collapse if humanity stands a chance. So I'm glad to see Putin standing up in Syria and exposing this government for the crimes against humanity and for backing ISIS. They create ISIS, they back ISIS, and then they say, oh, we need to go to Syria to fight ISIS. It's nonsense.
Well, you know what's, I don't know how you feel, but honestly, I'm almost 60, and frankly, the fact that we actually in our country think of Putin or any Russian leader is being more democratic than our own president, more forthright, having more integrity than any of our own elected officials is just, you know, when we talk about the middle class, frankly, I think myself personally, when I'm in conversation, I refuse to call it the middle class because guess what? It's the poverty class. When you say a third of the people are on food stamps, that's in poverty. They're not the middle class anymore. They are not middle class. They are poor people. We now have switched to a situation where we have a very tiny sliver of elite, a small section of middle class, and a majority of people heading towards living on the edge. And frankly, most people live on the edge. I mean, it is, you know, I do tax resolution and I interview people all the time that have big tax problems. They've fallen into debt because they couldn't pay their payroll debt or, you know, they had a medical emergency and had to, you know, sort of redo their withholdings on taxes. And to be honest, when I first got into this business, I was living in California making a pretty decent living, and I was shocked off my feet to understand how many people in this country are making $8, $9, $10, $12 an hour and struggling to get by. And that was, what, 10, 15 years ago. It has only exponentially gotten worse, and yet people still call themselves middle class making 10 bucks an hour.
Yeah. No, they are destroying this country on purpose, and they're doing a very good job of it. And Thomas Jefferson warned us, this is the other quote I wanted to read for you if I can. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. The issuing power should be taken from the banks and restored to the people to whom it properly belongs, end quote. And that's why we can't win this battle as long as the Federal Reserve is in control of our government, as long as we the people allow this privately owned, privately run central banking institution, really founded by the Rothschilds and their buddies, to exist. As long as we allow it, we are all headed towards poverty because they control the
system. Let me ask you this then, Sean. How do we start moving for a change? Like, what do we suggest that people listening to this show, what can people do to, I know I fall into that category. Like, it's great to say we want to abolish the Fed and get our currency back, but like, hey, where do you begin and how do you start and what do you do?
Yeah. I want to be cup half full guy, but I'm a little cynical at this point because I feel like our last best chance was Ron Paul. He had, we don't need to revisit that. You know what was going on with Ron Paul. He had more donations from active military, right, than all of the other Republican candidates combined.
No, I did not know that.
He had more grassroots support than, I mean, the grassroots support, the YouTube videos, the people showing up at the rallies. I went to two of them. packed standing room only. Contrast that against the other people that they were handing us, right? It's a criminal paradigm, and I'm not sure how to fix it at this point. I think that the best thing people can do to protect themselves in lieu of being able to actually take our government back, which at this point is actually a corporation, it's not a republic anymore, to protect yourself is probably the best thing you can do. It's the most libertarian thing you can do. And I want to leave people with this because I know we're running out of time.
Can you say protect yourself? What do you mean?
I'll tell you. I know that people are tight on money these days. The banks have us over a barrel. I get it. There's a lot of people living nightmares right now where, say, dad was making, $100,000 a year and mom was, at home with the kids, and now dad got laid off and he can't find another job, and it's been a year, and so now he's at Home Depot making $13.50 an hour, and their lives are falling apart, and they're they might lose their home. This is a story that's playing over and over again all over the country. And so what I'm about to say doesn't help those people because they don't have the extra money to buy a little silver. But let me tell you this. Physical silver and gold has been manipulated lower in the paper markets by the criminal banks on purpose because they cannot allow these metals to trade where they should be trading when priced in dollars, because it would tell the whole world that the dollar's worthless, right? It would be the ultimate sign of inflation and hyperinflation. So let me quantify it for you real quickly. In 2011, John Williams from shadowstats.com, by using the real numbers, he's an economist, and the real numbers that they used to use to calculate all this stuff back in the Reagan era, the Reagan administration, M1, M2, M3 money printing, he calculated that in 2011, Lonnie, the inflation adjusted all-time high. Now, you remember, the all-time high in silver was about $50 an ounce. That was in 1980. In 2011, if you account for all the paper that's been printed, the inflation adjusted all-time high was $138 an ounce. Now today in 2015, because of all the printing, the all-time high is $601 an ounce. Now I know that gets fuzzy for people who don't follow this stuff. Silver in 2011 was trading at $21, $22 an ounce. It's now back around $15. It's trading more cheaply than it was in 2011 because of the paper manipulation by the criminal banks. So you can buy an ounce of silver right now for $15 an ounce. And if it were trading freely and it went back to its all-time high when priced in $1980, it would be $600 an ounce. So people will say, Lonnie, I know this bores people to tears if they don't follow precious metals, but I'm giving you some really important information. And if you can buy an ounce of silver, if you can buy 10 ounces, check it out. You'll never not want to buy more because it's so beautiful and it's quantifiable. It's tangible wealth. So when this system collapses, when we hit hyperinflation of the dollar, tangible wealth like silver and gold will be priceless in dollars, right? Take a look what happened in Zimbabwe. I've got a $2 trillion Zimbabwe note sitting in my safe because I would just want to have one as an example of what hyperinflation is. So if people say, Lonnie, that, oh, well, silver could never possibly trade at $600 an ounce, I say, oh, really? What about the private central bank? What about the Pentagon and the $8.5 trillion that went out the back door? What about the $2.5 trillion in treasury sitting on the Federal Reserve's balance sheet because they're the buyer of last resort? And then I say, okay, well, if 600 is too high for you, and let's cut that in half. Let's cut it to 300. Let's cut it to 150.
Wow.
Silver is so manipulated right now that at $15 an ounce, it's an absolute gift. I'll leave you with this because I know I'm babbling and people may not understand exactly.
Well, I think I get it, and I think the idea.
Well, let me just finish one more thing. I just got to say this because people may not understand what I'm saying. If you go back to $1980,
okay,
$15 silver today would be less than $2 silver in 1980. That's how cheap it is. Like if you if you got in a time machine, you went back to 1980.
Yeah.
We're talking about less than $2 silver, when it's priced at 15 today. Silver right now, to be even remotely fairly priced, should be $180 to $120, $150 right now. It's at 15. So that's one of the ways you could protect yourself is buying physical silver or physical gold, because the banks cannot take that from you. They can only print away the paper stuff.
Wow. Well, look, Sean, I have many more questions, but I know that you need to leave at 8:45 here in about 5 minutes, so I won't ask you more. I have many questions, and hopefully you'll be willing to come back and we can dig into this, because that whole thing about the silver is very important for people who are unschooled in this to really comprehend so that they can, because we still have a window of time when people who don't really have a lot of tangible assets or money can actually scrape together a few pennies to really protect themselves, if nothing else, for a few months additionally to get themselves through, because the economy collapse is coming. It is going to happen. We are on the verge of something very cataclysmic. I really believe that. I think we can't put our heads in the sand. In fact, it's happening. We just don't see it. It's such a big system that the crumble is happening. It just hasn't fallen on us yet.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I won't play it for you now, but I did a video very recently. I think I did the video on October 1st called Congressional Martial Law Declared. You guys can just Google that on YouTube. Congressional Martial Law Declared. And it talks about how far gone this system is, Lonnie. Congress has now twice in just the past couple of months declared a martial law for itself so that they can deal with the debt ceiling without actually doing much debate or understanding the bills that they're passing. They're so broke that now they're really declaring martial law on themselves to prevent debate about how bad things are, to prevent the Congress from actually shutting down the government. We are in the last days of the Republic because of this type of malfeasance and behavior, and it's very, very, very sad because, Lonnie, it's going to get ugly when those 45 million people on food stamps, think about the people on disability, when those checks stop coming, or when those checks come and they're hyperinflated away so that your, I don't know, your $240 check will only buy you a couple loaves of bread and maybe 12 eggs. It's going to get very, very scary and very, very ugly. And
I keep thinking about the people who have the pensions, like at Teledyne, and all these people that have worked for the industrial military complex who've now retired, living on a very good pension right now. When it really comes to shove, those pensions are going to go. They're going to be worthless. They'll be pennies on the dollar, and they're going to be told. And their money is direct deposited into banks, into which they won't be able to take their money out. That's when I really think that we're going to see the people of America, like the older generation who basically gave up their soul to these corporations, when they realize they have been totally had and completely screwed, they're going to organize. And I think that that's when we're going to see real change and, you know, real, I don't know, I hate to say the word revolution, but I think we really need some type of an emotional revolution, if nothing else, because people need to wake up to the idea that they could care less whether we live or die, and frankly, I think they hope we die.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I used to interview Pastor Lindsey Williams regularly. Haven't heard from him in a while, but he used to tell me that their plan, the plan of the elite, was to make you so poor you'd be unable to fight back, and we're definitely on track for that. I'm not sure how people fight back when they're poor and hungry. Before we lose each other here, I just wanted to ask your thoughts on the St. Louis dump fire. I've been calling it American Fukushima. I mean, I'm just...
It is an American Fukushima. It's a shock. It is really, it's something that they've known about. And in fact, what they've been doing, instead of trying to figure out a way to resolve it, like dumping, I don't know, something on it, the problem is it's all in secrecy. So nope, those people that own it, where the dump site is, the company that owns it, they own the dump site, they own the whole land, and they're all protected under the Price-Anderson Act. So nobody has, they don't have an obligation to tell us anything. And in doing it, typically what the nuclear industry does, all they care about is profit. They're doing it the cheapest way they can. They are basically, instead of resolving the issue, they're just kicking it down the road and crossing their fingers and hoping it won't blow up, which, frankly, it's becoming a serious... I called Claire McCaskill's office several months ago when I found out, because I was like, oh, my God, this is urgent. They basically said, yeah, well, you're not our constituent, so we can't really discuss it with you. And I'm like, wow.
Well, Lonnie, so just so people understand, I'm sure you've covered this before, we're talking about a dump that's been on fire for years and is now, what, less than 1,000 feet away from a nuclear waste site? And the fear is that if the fire from the dump fire gets close
enough... It can go on. It can create a fire. It can blink.
about an evacuation of St. Louis, of parts of St. Louis.
I mean, not only that, all of the East Coast. It could create a fire that will not go out for 30 to 40 years. And it is actually only, when I called, it was 500 feet away, and now it is 300 feet away. It is making, this is why it's getting in mainstream news. It's making faster progress than anybody anticipated. And these people are doing nothing, and literally mainstream media is ignoring it. And when it becomes a huge fire, they're going to say, wow, we really didn't know. It is actually, anybody in Missouri who lives out there really needs to be pressuring their elected officials to, you know, emergency, Will Rogers. We need to really, this is a huge, gigantic issue, which frankly could set off the New Madrid fault, which is part of why I think they are letting it happen. Because if we had a nuclear explosion, the New Madrid fault, the whole thing, it could create the cataclysmic event that they want to have happen.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll leave you with this.
That's a happy note.
Yeah.
Well, Sean, I really appreciate you being here. Thank you so much for this magnificent interview. I hope to have you back on in about a month or so.
Oh, I'd be happy to come back on. And I just want to leave you with this. It was Dr. Lima Rabeau who came out, I believe it was around 2010, 2011, and said that one of the elite women that she knew told her that the Great Culling was about to begin. And she said, what? And the woman said, the Culling.
And right.
Labo said, well, I don't understand what you're saying. The Great Culling is about to begin. And she was talking about the culling of the people of the United States of America. And if you take a look, Lonnie, at the multiple vector points from which we're being hit, our dollar's being debased. We have Fukushima on the West Coast and in the atmosphere of the radiation. We've got the St. Louis dump fire that's nothing's being done about it. We have mandatory vaccination laws being passed. It's just out of control. And you mentioned chemtrails, the geoengineering, the engineer drought in California. We are being hit by multiple vector points. And I think their goal is to make us so poor and so filled with fear that we'll be unable to fight back. And it's astounding. So thanks for allowing me the opportunity to speak with you.
Well, thank you, Sean. I really appreciate all of your magnificent work. And please do come back and have a great day. And thank you for joining us today.
Okay, thanks. God bless everyone.
God bless you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Well, that was really an awesome interview, wasn't it, you guys? I really, Sean has such a great perspective. I mean, politically, we're a lot different. I'm gonna guess what you call a flaming liberal, because I never even really considered looking at Ron Paul just because he's a Republican. I would not ever in my lifetime ever vote for a Republican. That's kind of how I feel about it. Although, I think at a time in my life, there was a time I would have voted for a Republican, but you know, this really, one of the things that we really speak to is how we are being attacked. As I'm in this interview, I cannot tell you how I have been running my cell phone making videos, which I'm going to post up on my YouTube channel. Eugene, Oregon is being bombarded by chemtrails today, and they're literally circling the wagon. Literally, you can see the chemtrails making a circle. They're going in a U-turn, and it is a shock. So what does this mean? Like, you know, I listened to Dane Wigington's show about the chemtrails, and he thinks that the two major most critical issues of our time are the chemtrails and the nuclear issue. And boy, is he 100% right, because they are definitely putting something into our atmosphere. We started this hour with a perfectly blue sky outside my window, and in less than an hour, the sky is becoming kind of foggy with those chemtrail chemicals, which we know will filter down and, you know, bring us all the aluminum that we need to keep us lulled and silent. And I think that's what the aluminum is all about, is to keep us lulled and silent, just as Sean was saying, that we are in a time where they're hoping we will stay silent. And frankly, that is, I guess, the point of this radio show, is to help people get active, put your courage feet on. It is not easy to step outside of your comfort zone and to start calling your elected officials, especially when you believe that they are worthless. But I believe it's imperative that we not allow them to sleep at night. We need to let them know who we are, and we need to let them know that we're not afraid. I mean, as it is, We actually know we're all being spied on. I mean, that to me is enough. Like, when I mentioned Clapper in this interview with Sean earlier, because that was the most egregious event I think I had ever seen in my entire 60 years. John Clapper sitting in front of Congress, lying to Congress, and finding out that my own elected official, Ron Wyden, asked him a question directly, are you spying on Americans? And he knew, Ron Wyden knew that Clapper, the head of the CIA, was going to lie to us directly to our face, or the NSA, that was going to lie directly to our face and say no. And then a week later, we get Edward Snowden coming out and telling us that, yeah, indeed, in fact, we're all being lied. And in fact, our government is paying for every single phone number in this country to give them all up their all of their information. Our government pays the telephone companies $4,000 per telephone number to spy on everybody, to cooperate with them. I mean, I don't know how you feel, but I think we should all get free phone service if that's going to happen. I shouldn't be paying my cell phone bill. That's an outrage. Our government's already paying them $4,000 a year. I mean, talk about collusion and corruption. And, you know, my grandson works for a company that puts together computers. And, you know, these companies are getting subcontracted out to put spying information in there. I mean, it's an outrage that small little people are hooked in and engaged. For me personally, if I had been working with that company, I would have quit in a day. Like, I would never work for Teledyne, never work for any of the military industrial complex. I think if we starve the beast and don't give them our service, if people refuse to go into the service, we refuse to participate in their psychotic games, that we could actually upset the apple cart. Sean mentioned something about the student loan debt is in default. About a third of it is in default. Well, frankly, if every student in this nation, everybody who owed on their student loan refused to pay the debt, we could actually break the nation, the economy. We would force the bankers to actually get arrested. I mean, we could actually, the students have a lot more control than what they realize. And I think that's why they have MTV, you know what I mean? Like, just to keep people fat and happy. And frankly, in our country, it is a shock, because when we say people need to wake up, people are awake. They are just living in such constant fear, they can barely stand it. You know, we are being slathered on with the fear machine right now, with this whole thing of ISIS, ISIL. We see the trucks. I heard an interview with an ex-army wife saying that we actually send in mercenaries, that these people in the Middle East, they're just uneducated peasants. They're not terrorists. They're not people who kill people and maim. And, you know, we actually have had, the United States, the CIA has actually had to send in mercenaries to teach these people how to kill. Many of us questioned why we didn't see that Toyota, those long string of Toyota trucks that came directly from the U.S. that, you know, we're blaming the Syrians because they turned on us, essentially. That's the narrative, is we were trying to help the Syrians, and they turned our backs on us, and now they're going after us. What this ex-army wife was saying was that she knows for a fact that we are sending in mercenaries to train these people. So war is the primary product of the United States. That is really it. And in order to keep the war going, they have to use the television and the radio to keep people afraid. I mean, didn't we hear a story this week about, oh my God, they're bringing hundreds or tens of thousands of Syrians in through the southern border. And why are they only bringing males in, and all those Muslims, and what are they doing to us? And frankly, I don't buy it, and I'm not going to participate in it. There was a time in my life when I was much younger, maybe 30 years ago, I was a practicing Baha'i. And Baha'i is basically a religion that believes in peace. And that's partly why I liked it, because it's a religion that is actually based on pacifism. They don't believe in war. They study all religions. Baha'u'llah, who started the religion in Persia, went to jail for 29 years because he wasn't a Muslim, right? So in those countries, in those days, you could be not non-Muslim. Just as here in our country, we would you know, the heretics went to jail. So it's not about these religions, in my view. This is why I kind of have turned to Eastern philosophy, because in my view, religions, any organized religion, is really just about controlling people. And my daughters used to say to me, Mom, how can you still go to church? Well, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, there is a lot of, as humans, we thrive on the spiritual level. We have an opportunity. We have a gift of being spiritual beings. And if we refuse to acknowledge that gift, we wallow in the quagmire of hate and fear, which is where the people who are running our country, the people who run the feds, they have no spirituality. If they looked at us as useless feeders, what do you think they think of any other human being on this planet? I mean, we are really literally, they consider us to be just sucking off of their money. They view everything as their money. And, you know, it is imperative that all of us figure out where we're lacking in our own education, do our own research. Thankfully, we still have the internet. I believe that that will actually be taken away from us. The elites will have the internet. Most of the population will be left in abject darkness and silence. I don't even know if we'll have our cell phones, because they don't want us interconnected. This thing in St. Louis is a huge issue, you guys. I actually believe that it could actually create a massive catastrophic event. It's only 300 feet away. So, and they're not doing anything to stop it. So the day of reckoning is coming for the St. Louis, Missouri area, and the people out there really need to get engaged on this on this action. It's kind of why I have joined forces with Mimi Gurman up in the Northwest, because the Northwest in its own right is under a dire threat from the 12 earthquake faults underneath Hanford in the Columbia Generating Station. So look, I am going to be kind of a broken record here and encourage everybody to go to the NRC website. Get familiar with the NRC website. Look at the things for public comment and read what they're saying. It is shocking. I've been encouraging everybody to put in their comments and tell the NRC that we do not, we know for a fact that hormesis is a theory that is unfounded in scientific basis. There is no real safe level of radiation. On my YouTube channel last night, the chapter I read in John Goffman's book, it's not a whole chapter, about, I guess I read 6 or 7 pages last night after work. He was talking about how this is an unfounded theory that radiation is good for us, but it has been promulgated by the nuclear technologists and taken as its word. Even last night on the Democratic Party debate, Jim Webb was saying, I'm pro-nuclear, we need nuclear, it's safe, it's clean, it's no problem. That's a democratically elected ex-military man telling us that nuclear is safe post-Fukushima. And this is what we're up against. So all of us really need to get our education so we can actually stand up to people like that. We are not stupid human beings. Human beings have a capacity for knowledge and spirituality that surpasses, I don't know, you know, because we can't talk to the whales, we don't know if we surpass them. But we have a capacity for spirituality at least as strong as most of the mammals on this planet. So I am encouraging everybody to please go to the NRC website, make your comments against hormesis. On my YouTube channel on Nuts for Art, NutzForArt, I'm going to give a shameless plug. We are trying to get a gamma spectrometer here for the People's Clinic at radcast.org so that we can test our food in the Northwest, because our government is not testing it. And it costs about $4,000, so we need crowdfunding on that. I have a whole playlist on that, so please do. And I'll put that link in the comment section when I mirror this to my channel. And I also started a GoFundMe page for the children of Fukushima. It's a $50,000 goal. I want to send 5 families $10,000. There is a 50-fold increase in thyroid cancer to the children in Fukushima. I'll put that link in also. So in the closing minutes, I just want to say put your courage feet on, and thanks for being here this morning. We'll talk to you soon.